Thank you, Mark. I want to begin this morning, as I did at 8:45, sharing something of a confession amongst you all. It's either one of those moments when someone says that you kind of might lean slightly forward in your chair, saying, oh, we've got something interesting this morning, a bit of meat, something to share and to gossip, although obviously we don't do that as Christians, with others. On the other hand, in a few moments, you then might go, no, actually, that wasn't much really to talk about really at all. So why was he really making such a thing of it? I need to confess this morning that I am not a gardener. Those of you who know my dad will know that he spent most of his working life as a gardener, as a head gardener at Ashburnham Place for 20 years, now at another privately owned estate. He's the one who in 25 minutes managed to cut the hedges at the manse, and they look amazing. He's able to fell a tree, and again, it goes exactly where you want it to go. You have a bed that's not been weeded in months, and within minutes, it can look pristine and new and full of life. That's not me. I'm not a gardener. I'm a digger. From a young age, I've been someone who has loved to dig. When we lived in Cornwall, as a family, Rachel, my older sister, and I were both given a little patch of ground in our garden that we were allowed to do with what we wanted. Rachel, doing the more gardening thing, actually tried to grow some plants and bits and pieces and that sort of thing. I just dug. In this patch, which was probably about this long by about that sort of thing, I would just dig the biggest hole that I could. And then after a while, I'd fill it in again because that was all I could do. And then maybe I'd dig it again. Because it was just that sense of the excitement and the enjoyment. And it's something that's continued. When I was a teenager and I spent about 2 years working every Saturday doing gardening work for a family in Battle, the first job I did for them was to dig a pond that was about 3 metres by 2 metres and about a metre deep. After I'd finished it, after spending about 3 months in the rain and all manner of awful conditions, they then finally bought a wheelbarrow for me. By that point, it was a little late. But again, I was good at it because it was just digging. They got me to dig an 80-foot badger fence around the edge of their garden. Again, prime individual for that job because it was just digging, moving dirt. Even up at the manse, since we moved in, the few things we've done in the garden, one of the, I think, Mike highlights here is that we dug a fire pit, myself and the children. Again, because it's just digging. Spade, dirt, you get the picture. We're going to take some time this morning, this evening, and next week to reflect on and consider some of the things that we believe God maybe has been saying to us over the last month or so, and want to kind of build in on a regular pattern, actually space to share and to reflect on what are the things that God is saying, what are the things that he's setting before us. And I want to talk very much this morning on this whole sense that I believe God is calling us into a time when we as individuals, but also as a family of God, as a church, need to be getting ready to dig and doing just that. About 20 years ago, I read a book. I have read one or two since. But I read a book called Unblocking the Wells, all about foundations for revival. And this passage in Genesis 26 and this whole challenge of what does it mean to be ready for all that God has ahead of us, to be ready for all that he is laying before us. And I came across this again last summer and was reading it through and praying about it, reflecting on it. And then in the autumn, I actually got in touch with the widow of the guy who wrote it and was kind of corresponding with her. And then on January the 1st, someone came and spoke to me and said they really felt that God had laid the passage of Genesis 26 for us, you know, as a church, potentially, on their heart, this whole theme of unblocking the wells. As a group of the staff team here in the office, we went to a conference at the beginning of January, and one of the sessions was on Genesis 26, unblocking the wells. And then, kind of one stage further, really, this whole topic and opportunity of revival has been something that God has been speaking to us afresh, and with what he's doing around the country at this time. It's just these, you see these kind of threads coming together. You kind of then, after a while, kind of go, maybe God's putting us something before us to consider, to reflect on. And that's what I want us to do this morning in part. Turn to Genesis 26. I'm going to read verses 12 to 25. the account of Isaac, Abimelech, and these wells. Verse 12 says, Isaac planted crops in that land, and the same year reaped a hundredfold because the Lord blessed him. The man became rich, and his wealth continued to grow until he had become very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Move away from us. You have become too powerful for us." So Isaac moved away from there and encamped in the valley of Gera, where he settled. Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died. And he gave them the same names his father had given them. Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there. But the herders of Gera quarreled with those of Isaac and said, "The water is ours." So he named the well Ezek, because they disputed with him. Then they dug another well, but they quarreled over that one also, so he named it Sitna. He moved on from there and dug another well, and no one quarreled over it. He named it Rehoboth, saying, "Now the Lord has given us room, and we will flourish in the land." From there he went up to Beersheba. That night the Lord appeared to him and said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you, and will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham." Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. There he pitched his tent, and there his servants dug a well. In Genesis, we see a family story that would rival any sitcom that we might watch on TV today. The ups and the downs, the mess that they get themselves into, the deceit, the lying, the backstabbing, the drunkenness, it's all in there if you kind of look at the different passages. And EastEnders, Coronation Street, or whatever you choose to watch, doesn't really have anything on a lot of what we read in the book of Genesis. But yet we see through this God's purposes being outworked. And in many ways it's a reminder that God doesn't work at our level. What's the point? We don't get work at God's level. Whatever's going on in our midst, whatever we're facing, whatever we're struggling and grappling with, God is so much greater and so much more vast and so much more gracious and loving and caring and willing to work in and through us than we would ever want to allow others to. And through this ebb and this flow of the account in Genesis, we see, as I say, God's purposes, still in their infancy in many ways, because Genesis is the beginning, and it's quite a beginning, but it's still the beginning of what God is unfolding for his creation and for all who will follow. Beginning in chapter 26, tells us there was a famine in the land, in verse 1. And Isaac goes to Abimelech and the king of the Philistines, and obviously kind of looking for maybe support or for food or recognizing the time of need. And like every good son, Isaac follows in his father's footsteps. So whereas yesterday I went to the cinema with Ewan, and it was a glorious moment because he asked to sit on the front row right in the center, like everyone should do, because it's the only way you can really enjoy a film. You know, you get that moment, but yeah, this is a proud dad moment. Not quite the same here, because Isaac following in his father's footsteps is he pulls the same shenanigans of saying to Abimelech, "Oh yeah, my wife, she's actually my sister, because I'm a bit worried about myself, really." And again, gets into the same problems that Abraham does. Abimelech realizes, to put it quite bluntly, he's not best pleased, but basically says to everyone else, "Leave him alone." Whether that's because this guy's trouble, because the implications on him, you know, if we get involved, you get involved, aren't going to be good, but he's saying, leave him alone. And it's at that point that we pick up in verse 12, when Isaac planted crops in the land and the same year reaped a hundredfold because the Lord blessed him. A hundredfold. That's like you in your vegetable patch. You know, you plant one cabbage plant, but you end up with 100. It's massive. That's the blessing that God pours upon Isaac. So much so, though, that the Philistines actually start to envy him, we read. And Abimelech actually gets to the point of saying, enough is enough here. You need to move on. You need to head out somewhere else. we don't want you around. And so Isaac does so, but begins to reopen and redig the wells that were stopped up by the Philistines that his father Abraham had dug. And as he'd done this, he then moves on in to dig fresh new wells. We see initially the first well, Ezek, means disputed, because the herders say kind of, well, actually, no, you can't have that. It's not yours. We want it. So Isaac moves on again, digs a second well. Sitna, name means opposed. Again, because there's this quarreling, there's this fighting over whose it is and whether Isaac should be able to settle there or not. And then thirdly, we're told he digs a well which he names Rehoboth, which means sunk, talking about this persistence, this pushing through. And there he says, now the Lord has given us room and we will flourish in the land. And then in verse 24, Isaac, God appears to Isaac. He says, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you and will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. And again, that's one of those images, those pictures that I think we can become so maybe familiar with within the life of the church of, well, obviously God kind of, yeah, giving you lots of descendants, increasing that sort of thing, great. But the enormity of what God is saying here is something we shouldn't miss. The blessing that he pours upon Isaac, that he is following through in terms of his promise to Abraham. And when we think about revival, a phrase maybe that kind of comes and goes, maybe there are those moments where everyone's kind of talking about it and something happens and we read something on the news and we maybe all get excited and then it kind of dies away a bit, or it comes again and that sort of thing. It's the whole idea of being revived, being woken up. A fresh awakening. And as I've been reflecting on this passage and reading through these verses, it's that sense of longing for God to move in such a way that we can't settle, because he's so present. The air is so thick with his power that you can't go anywhere and it doesn't, you know, and you can't experience it, can't feel it. I believe out of this passage, there were two kind of key challenges that I want us to reflect on briefly this morning as to how can we seek to move into all that God has ahead of us. How can we seek to recognize the power of God and the fact that it's not just a power that he wants to kind of pour out somewhere else or at a certain point in history that we can all look back on, but right here, right now, today in our lives. Initially, and rather unsurprisingly, I think we need to unblock. As a child, as well as digging holes, I wasn't perfect. Sorry to shatter that illusion if anyone had that. On one occasion, I remember getting quite a bit of trouble because a group of friends and I, there was a big playing field near where we lived, and once they'd cut all the grass, and we kind of, you gather it up and that sort of thing, and we found this manhole cover, which we opened and started filling with grass, because it was great fun. Little did we realise that it was the way the water kind of flowed into this guy's house, and he discovered not only that we'd put the grass in there, obviously, but that we'd done it. Anyway, that's for another time. But the point is, if you want something to flow through, if you want to receive water out of a well, you've got to unblock it. You've got to clean it out. And that's one of the things that we see Isaac doing here. They had to dig it out to get the water. And in many ways, you might kind of go, well, that's not rocket science. That's kind of obvious. But I wonder, for how often do we find there are things in our lives that we just kind of, we leave. Obstacles, things that have happened, things that we hold on to. And actually that are blockages for all that God wants to do in our lives. Things that we need to grapple with, we need to be willing to get our hands dirty over and pull out so that we can receive all that God has for us. Echoes in many ways what Dennis was saying last week at 8:45 when he preached on praying expectantly. And it was really challenging what he said. He said, we shouldn't pray to God for people to be saved. In the sense that we shouldn't pray to God, kind of, God, we'd really like you to save people, as if God doesn't want that as well. Whereas sometimes, actually, our prayers for people, can be almost like we've got to try and convince God that this is a good idea, that people discover Jesus and follow him. And actually, the challenge Dennis was suggesting, actually, it's how do we pray for those obstacles to be moved in people's lives? So, I think of my uncle, who's not a believer. Rather than spending hours talking, whenever I pray, praying for my uncle, that, you know, God save him, but actually praying for the obstacles that are in his life, that are going to be barriers between him and God, praying for them to be removed, praying for people to be able to intervene and move in those situations. But again, that may involve us getting our hands dirty, which is something we might not naturally want to do. We might quite like being, you know, an armchair critic and actually just sitting back and kind of saying, well, yeah, really, it'd be great if that happened, but it's never going to happen. Oh, it'd be really good if that took place, but I'm not actually going to get involved myself. So we need to look to unblock. But also, I believe we need to be strategically and purposely digging afresh. We saw here in this story that it wasn't just about unblocking the old wells. That Isaac went on and dug new wells. And not just one, but a number. And as God speaks and guides us, and we believe that he's urging us in to new opportunities, new situations, as we're digging afresh, I believe we need to ask the question, are we ready? Are we ready for God to speak and we can respond? Isaac's servants, it's not detailed, but Isaac's servants would have had the tools and the means to dig the wells. I doubt they would have gone out with their, you know, their teaspoons or the equivalent and start scratching around in the dirt, hoping that they'd get there and it would work and it would be fine. They would have had the right equipment to be able to dig a well. And it needs to go a bit deeper than the holes that I would have dug as a child in my parents' garden. You know, you've got to dig down till you reach the water. It's not a simple, quick, easy task. It's asking that question, are we ready for what God is saying, for what God is asking of us? Are we ready to be used by him? Are we spiritually fit and at our best? Someone who goes running, if I want to run a race, I need to be ready. I don't sit around eating junk food for weeks, refusing to actually put one foot in front of the other, you know, driving everywhere that I can, and doing as little exercise as possible. No, you want to eat the right things. You want to prepare. And we talk about God moving. We're praying that God will, you know, his power will come. But are we actually ready for that? I don't believe that's about saying you've got to do X, Y, and Z, and then it'll all fall into place. But it's about saying, how can I constantly be ensuring that in my relationship with God, I'm in the best place I can be? Not having that question thinking, well, actually, compared to Mark, am I in the best? You know, who's actually, am I best? But no, between me and God. Because that's the other challenge I think we can face, is we are naturally compare ourselves to other people. And we don't actually have that conversation with God. We just kind of compare, well, actually, compared to them, well, maybe I'm not, or maybe I am actually better. So we need to be ready. If we're going to dig afresh to see God's power released. We need to know where to dig as well if we're going to dig afresh. Isaac and his servants, we're told, dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there in verse 19. Now, it doesn't say that this was their 28th attempt, you know, and they'd kind of actually spent 4 weeks digging. And actually the first 27 tries didn't yield anything. They obviously knew where to dig. They knew not just what they needed to be able to dig, but they knew where to dig. And I wonder whether sometimes we have that image where it's like in the idea that actually just those images with lots of different holes all over the place. And in the end, we'll get there. In the end, we'll find that spot. If we dig hard enough, if we cover enough ground, ultimately it will all come together. rather than actually going, well, no, where is it we should dig? Where is it where we should be moving? What is it that, you know, that God is setting before us, and how is that the place that we're going to invest our energy and our time? If we're going to dig afresh, we need to be hearing God's voice. We need to be seeking Him. And not just going, great, God's spoken, right, we can now run with that for the next 5-10 years. But actually, how are we constantly seeking to hear from God? How are we constantly looking to hear what He's got for us? And the difference that hearing that can make in our lives is massive. So we need to be ready. We need to know where to dig. And if we're going to dig afresh, we also need to ignore distractions. Isaac and his servants, we're told, dug various wells. And they didn't simply fight it out with the first bunch of locals when they said, no, we want it. You know, it could have gone very differently from kind of verse 20. It could actually say, yeah, but the herders of Gerar quarreled with those of Isaac and said, the water is ours. And Isaac and his servants said, bring it on. We'll see you at dawn. And whoever's, you know, going to bring it will get the well. They didn't. They moved on. And they dug somewhere else. And I wonder whether sometimes we get stuck in a rut. Maybe we think in a very good, godly sense, this is what we should be doing. But we almost get distracted from what God is actually saying for us to do and the directions He's calling us in because of the things that are around us. Someone at a conference I was at last year said the prophets of doom are always there. There'll always be those people who will kind of say, it's never going to work, or you shouldn't be doing that, or you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and all that sort of thing. There will always be people like that. And that's why we need to be constantly seeking to hear from God. And so when those distractions comes, we can actually press on, recognizing that actually they're things that are going to try and pull us off course, whether personally, whether corporately. It's not saying that we just charge on regardless, though. Because there is that chance of somebody say, well, actually, therefore, you're just going to, you know, don't listen to anyone, and just carry on. And I don't care what you're saying. I don't care what comment you have. I don't care what concern you may bring, because I'm just going to keep going for it. No, it's about saying, God, how are you constantly engaging and speaking into this situation? And how can we discern those things that are not of you, and therefore move past them, move around them, humbly seek to deal with them so that they don't cause us to be distracted and pulled off course. It's a question of maybe what are the wells which are blocked in our lives? Talking with someone in the break between the two meetings, we often maybe think of, you know, the idea of a blockage being something that stops it completely. But actually, you can have a pipe or you can have a well that is partially blocked, that a trickle can still come through, or you can still get water at the well, but actually it's rather disgusting because of the junk that's in it. What are the things that we need to deal with that are blocking the well where our relationship with God comes, where the opportunity to follow Him and be used by Him is concerned? And then what are the new wells that we're being called to dig? Maybe very personally, what are the things that actually God is setting before you that you've had that voice in the back of your head, you've had those verses have been brought to you, there's things that just you can't put it out of your mind, you feel God is saying, and actually maybe you need to step forward in faith and act on it? And as a church, we need to be constantly saying, God, what is it you're calling us to? Where are you calling us to dig afresh? How are we responding to what you're saying to us? And how are we longing for your power to come in a new and a fresh way in our midst? I want to pray as we close. But just to say, I got in touch with the widow of the guy who wrote this booklet, Unblocking the Wells. And I've got a number of copies that are on the table just by the door. And I'd really encourage you to take one. It's only kind of like 70 pages. It's a pamphlet, not a book. So if reading's not your top thing, that should hopefully be okay. And some of it, yes, is written from the point of view of someone who's writing in 1997. in terms of revival and some of the things going on. But I think there's a lot in there that actually can really challenge us, maybe give us questions to consider, things to work through. As we humbly say to God, okay, what is it that you've got ahead of us in the next week, in the next month, in the coming years? And how are we going to dig into all of that for your glory? Let's pray. God, I want to thank you for your word. I want to thank you for the fact that you work through people who are messed up individuals, which is hope for all of us, Lord. I want to thank you that there's none of us who are too far to be able to get to know you and to be able to walk with you. And I pray that you will, by your Spirit, be speaking into our hearts, into our lives, both individually but also together. Help us to hear the things you're saying, to deal with the things that need to be addressed, but also to press in and to dig afresh into the new things that you have ahead of us, Lord. Amen.